When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Join the conversation. Call 1300 01 1170 or text 0457 736 736. Welcome to the Show and Go with Jimmy Galvin and Drew Mitchell on SEN.
Welcome to the Show and Go on SEN. It is Jimmy Galvin, myself, rugby tragic and quite tragic this morning with my man, Drew Mitchell. Drew, a tough night at the office last night at the SCG for the Wallabies, mate.
Yeah, mate, it certainly was. Look, it wasn't the outcome that we all wanted here as Wallaby supporters, but I think we can all probably agree at least that it was, you know, it was a good game. It was a fitting decider, and England just too good with just too many missed opportunities, which I'm sure we'll delve into more throughout the show. But, yeah, you were tragic yesterday.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
I don't think there was one more piece of Wallabies merchandise that you could have been like sporting on the way to the game. I told you as well, you're going to be cold out there. And
yeah,
were you?
Yeah, did. Yeah, I was a bit nippy. It was, yeah. I was in the elements, but I said to you, and very avidly, I'm not wearing a white singlet underneath my shirt because that just is a sign of weakness. And what were you wearing?
A sign of weakness for what? In what
for
reason?
Supporting England.
Okay, so you rock up today in a white shirt.
It's radio, mate.
I don't think anyone would have seen your white shirt under Wallabies. Three layers of Wallabies jerseys and jackets.
Look, it was nippy out there, but I've got to say, great atmosphere. And how good was it to see a packed stadium? And I didn't think Swing Low was that loud out there last night. I was concerned about that.
Oh, you were concerned, were you?
I was concerned.
I mean, I think we can all agree it's not ideal to be playing rugby at the SCG. And I think this probably may be the last game that we play there in terms of a rugby test match because the new SFS will be fixed soon. And I think September 9, we're due to play there against the Springboks.
Springboks.
But at the same time, packed SCG and a crowd that were well and truly involved in the game and engaged with the game. And, and just so much support around the Wallabies, but also rugby, I think, as well, was great to see.
Tell you what I saw a bit of support of last night as
What's
well.
What's that? There was a
particular running race that happened down Oxford Street.
Mate, you've got to give this up, honestly.
It's the second time I've beat you in a running race, mate. Drew and I like to challenge each other after a sporting event.
No, you challenge me, and you haven't even got close to my shadow yet.
And I've you know, for a former Wallaby winger, you got to do better than not beating me, a tragic, you know, quite chody
Come
as
on.
Well, really.
You are very much a chode, and you definitely didn't win, didn't even get close, so stop trying to change the narrative. But, look, I think there's plenty of talking points out of that game last night.
Yeah.
Like I said, some missed opportunities. I thought the defence of England was really strong.
That's what won them the game.
Yeah, especially in that second half. Really, it was just, it was structured. It was together. They had clarity of purpose in their role. And, and they made it difficult because, you know, the Wallabies at that point were throwing absolutely everything at them. 18 phases and a number of times over the 10-phase count. And they just kept repelling them. And you know, I mean, it must be said, like, whilst we're disappointed as Wallaby supporters, for sure, they did deserve the win. So
I think they deserved the series. The way they bounced back.
Yeah,
to come
back
two.
From, first game down.
Yeah.
Respond the way they did and then to continue on with it last night. It's impressive.
You look at the Wallabies team, you got to say, Marika Korombete, he is one of the standout players for the
Absolutely.
Wallabies at the moment.
Like
that is an investment for the future.
Well, I mean, he's been around for a little while now, and he's won the Johnny's Medal a number of times, and he's the man of the series he was awarded that last night over the last three games. He keeps just proving his value, and I think it's not just, you know, as in his finishing and his capabilities to score tries and make line breaks, like the work that he does off the ball. His defensive efforts to get across the field and put players into touch and his effort on efforts, his willingness to get involved. Because, look, there's one thing having the capacity to change a game with your athletic prowess. But there's a, it's another thing to put yourself in a position to change the game rather than the ball come to you and then you change it. Like Mariki's just forever going around the field looking to get his hands on the ball to put his imprint on the game. And, you know, when you've got someone like as hungry as that, it can only be infectious. And yeah, look, I think he's been fantastic for a number of years, but I'm somewhat surprised, but also not surprised the fact that his game's still getting better.
What did you make of, we look at the other team last night and you look at England. What did you, who was the standout on the other team for you? I mean, Owen Farrell, you can't go past, that guy's a big game player.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go past him because I thought Freddie Stewart was their best last night. Yep. And that's with respect to Owen. I think he was also really good. But I thought Freddie Stewart at the back there, at fullback for England, was solid under the high ball.
Yep.
He's got a, he's deceptively big. Like, I was down on the sideline last night.
He's a monster.
Yeah, and walking past. I mean, I filled out his jersey on that that bet that I lost last week at, that Kurt Lee lent me. But, like, I just thought he was safe at the back. His kicking game was strong. He was, you know, he was solid with his ball carry. He was just, he was another one that was able to just impose himself and inject himself when needed. I thought he was strong. Yeah. Ellis Genge, again.
What a series he's had.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just come off winning the premiership over in England. He's moving over to the Bristol Bears as well, which was a contentious
back
thing.
Down there, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he started there, went up to Leicester and then back to Bristol. He said he didn't want to leave Leicester until he left.
He won a
premiership, so he's done that.
But wow, man! How long is this going to be around for? Because I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. You know, we've got someone like that in Taniela Tupou, and it's just, you know, it's about putting those performances consistently at that level at the international stage. And Ellis Genge, especially for those guys, you've got to also
he backed up his words as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. But these guys, they're at the back of a 40-game season, you know, like the English guys. Like they now go back home, over to Europe, do whatever they want to do for the next 5 weeks because it's their time off now. So it's been a long slog for those guys. And then to still be putting in those types of performances at the back end of a really long year, it was even more so impressive. But, yeah, I just thought Ellis Genge, his scrummaging was strong. He's an imposing presence around the field, and he's someone that I would imagine that, you know, if you get the ball in hand, you're looking up for him, or conversely, in the defensive line, you're like, okay, especially if he's got a bit of a head of steam up, because he was taking names. That last night when he just bumped off Samu Karevi.
Yeah, well.
Like, not many do that.
No.
And did it with relative ease. The week before, Michael Hooper, you know, he's just taking names.
That was eerie. Were we missing anyone out there last night from a Wallabies perspective? I mean, were there holes in the lineup? Because
I mean, look, I mean,
I had a few injuries.
Yeah, I was going to say there's probably eight people weren't available from the first game. So of course we're going to be missing some people. I think if everyone was fully fit, that the team may not have looked exactly like it did last night. But that's, you know, that's international footy. That's part of it. I think maybe moving forward we'll probably bring back an Arnold. Maybe a Skelton. Look, I like Skelton, but I think they'll probably go more so with Arnold first, just because you get more minutes out of him and more quality out of him.
I thought we were a chance of bringing back Skelton for this week.
Well, I think maybe because of the reason I just spoke about, the long season.
They're letting him have some time and they might bring him back.
Yeah, because the other thing as well is, like, if he does the full season up there in the north, comes back in his off season and just plays footy all here and then goes back into it, he won't be available for the World Cup next year because his body will break down. You know, you just can't keep playing at that level continuously week in, week out. So these guys do need a rest, and wherever they get that rest is up to, well, to them, their clubs and the Wallaby staff. But I think we'll bring one, if not both, of those guys back.
I'll tell you who else might need a rest. You. Because I reckon Will Skelton could beat you in a running race at the moment.
James, you're flogging a dead horse, mate.
No.
You're not even close to me.
Okay, I will challenge you. Bledisloe Cup down in Melbourne on the Thursday night. I'll challenge you down the main street of Melbourne.
And
mate,
to make it even, I'll wear a weighted vest.
Chapel Street. coming up on the show today, guys, we have Phil Waugh.
Yep.
Wallaby legend, and he's on the board for Rugby Australia as well.
Yeah, we want to get his thoughts on last night.
Yeah.
And also, we want your thoughts as well, so make sure you give us a text on 0457 736 736.
Nice plug there, Drew. Yeah. And you know who else we've got on the show today?
Who?
He's just as tragic, but for another country. Andrew Mertens.
Is he?
Yeah, Mertens is coming
on the show today.
Yeah, he's coming on the show today. We're having a chat with
Mertens. Look, that's another one, obviously, we're going to talk about the All Blacks getting defeated by the Irish. So, really interested to hear what Mertz has to say about that.
Absolutely. There's been a lot happening in world rugby, and we're going to be back with you right after the break.
Join the conversation. Call 1300 01 1170 or text 0457 736 736. You're listening to The Show and Go with Jimmy Galvin and Drew Mitchell on SEN.
Welcome back on The Show and Go with myself, Jimmy Galvin, and Mr. Drew Mitchell. Drew, a tough game last night, but we're here and we, you know what? There's a lot to take out of it. And
yeah.
You know what I'm happy about?
What's that?
I get to spend my Sunday mornings with you, but also we're joined by an absolute legend of the game in Phil War. Warry, welcome to The Show and Go on SEN, my friend.
It's great to be making my debut with you fine young gentlemen, so thanks for having me on.
Mate, good to have you. Mate, Warry, firstly, we've got to get straight into it. What did you make of the Wallabies' performance last night?
Oh, it's probably a bit scratchy. I think everyone was probably a little bit disappointed with the outcome, and Paddington, Surrey Hills, Moore Park was on fire from about 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and a really good atmosphere around the SCG, and a real spectacle around the game. And then look, the Wallabies had their chances early, and as you know, Drew, when you've got your chances, particularly against an English side, you've got to nail those chances and turn it into points. And we gave up those chances. England sort of climbed their way back into it, and then it was sort of a bit of an uphill battle from there, and had a chance probably in the last 10 to 15 minutes to close it out with a try, but just the defence from England was pretty impressive. So all in all, it was probably a missed opportunity for what could have been a really good night for rugby.
Hey, Warry, I mean, you sit on the board now for Rugby Australia. You must be pretty chuffed with how this series panned out, the eyeballs on the game and the quality of game that was out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really good feel about the game at the moment. I think, obviously, the announcement of the 27 World Cup bid win and the 29 for the women's has really put a spring in everyone's step. And if you think about France in 23 next year, and then the Lions in 25, and then Home World Cup in 27, then Women's World Cup in 29, and then you have the Olympics in between, it's actually a really good decade of rugby for everyone. So it's a really good opportunity. And the Wallabies and the Waratahs did a really good job of this in the Super Rugby, just sort of winning the hearts and minds of the spectators. And that's probably why last night would have been great to close out with a victory, and everyone walks away feeling really positive about the game. But there's still a lot to like about the way the Wallabies are going about their work. They've had a lot of injuries. You know, 2 years ago, probably couldn't have fielded as strong a team had they had that number of injuries. So so a fair bit of depth coming through, but just need to get into that winning habit.
And Warry, a new inclusion this year has been the Australia A program. How important is that? You just mentioned like a couple of years ago, we probably couldn't have fielded that team. How do you feel that is impacting on the professional game?
Yeah, it's always been an important part. I think I remember playing, we beat the British and Irish Lions in 2001, on a Wednesday night in Gosford. And it really is sort of the breeding ground of a lot of good players coming through and gives them that exposure. And particularly when they're playing against Samoa and Fiji and Tonga, in the Pacific Islands, and they're all strong outfits as well. So again, just builds that depth, give guys a little bit more exposure at that next level rather than going back to club rugby. But fortunately, I think now everyone gets the opportunity to go back and play in the community and play with their clubs, which is equally as important. But it really does just give players that extra high level of game time, which we saw Hodge come into the game last night. He's been playing with Australia A and others that Wilson as well. So others that when you've got injuries in the Wallabies haven't necessarily been in the squad, and then they come out of the Australia A program with game time under their belt, and they can slot into the team seamlessly.
Well, now you used to like getting right amongst the rough and tough stuff. And there's been a bit of niggle in this series. Johnny Hill, the English lock in particular, getting involved. How would you have reacted if you had your hair pulled like Darcy Swain did from Johnny Hill in the second game? Or the first game, rather?
I must have had too much pulled, because there's not much left of my head anymore. But I think, and as when I was playing, we didn't have the TMO coming in for every breakdown. Otherwise, I would have spent more time off the field than on it. But I think, I think you know, everyone enjoys the niggle. I genuinely think the State of Origin spectacle on Wednesday night would have put a lot of feeling into last night's game as well, because it was everyone loves seeing passion out the field, and there's a fair bit of niggle, but unfortunately sort of Darcy sort of fell for it, and it's a pretty innocuous little head tap, but that's all it takes, and so probably a level of criticism or observation. We just sort of don't seem to be winning those niggling battles, and the battles of winning the referees over as well. So we saw in Europe last year, we probably should have won games up there in Europe that we lost just on the back of a little bit of ill discipline. So we just need to get a little bit smarter there, and look at the great teams that have been very successful over a long period of time. It's been those ones that have been able to work with the referee and get a better outcome on the back of refereeing decisions. So I think that is really an area of improvement for our guys to work on.
Mate, you may have just come up with something. Maybe there's space for a niggle consultant within the squad. Would you come in and help the guys? Firstly, how to niggle, but then also how to deal with the niggle?
Mate, I'd be the best. I spent over a decade doing that.
If there's ever a role, yeah.
Out the field as well. it's actually interestingly, it's actually a really important part of the game. And obviously, the best players are those that said Richie or Cornet Krieger, or some of the best in the game were those that got away with it for a long period. But they always know when to step back, but also know how to irritate the opposition to get the best outcome for their team.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And there's plenty of niggle in this studio sometimes as well, Worry, I assure you that. It's not easy doing the show with Drew on Sunday mornings. But I wanted to ask you quickly about the Waratahs next season as well, Worry. I know that you spent your entire career with the Tars in Super Rugby. How do you think they're going to be shaping up next year after a surprisingly successful year this year?
Yeah, look, I think that, again, it's all about driving a strong culture. I think Darren Coleman's done a really good job of delivering that culture, and all the players having buy-in, and you can see now players wanting to come back and play for the Waratahs, and great to have Curtly Beale coming back to Sydney. And, think about the audience that we managed to get at Leichhardt, and with the new stadium coming on board, and, think about, Surry Hills and Paddington and Moore Park last night, and the vibe that had around it. I think it's going to be a really good opportunity for Sydney and rugby in Sydney and the Waratahs. So I think they're actually in a really good space. And obviously the Trans Tasman competition is heating up as well. So I'm actually pretty optimistic about the Waratahs. And the best thing is that players genuinely want to come back and put on the sky blue jersey, which that's the most important thing. And then that then encourages fans and gets the fan buy-in, and still got to come back to that sort of connectivity with the community and the clubs, and how does everyone get on board, right from club rugby right through to the Waratahs, and then obviously what we saw last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Phil Waugh, thank you so much for joining us on the Show and Go this morning, mate, and good luck for the rest of the Wallaby season as well. I know you'll be out there supporting and getting behind the game, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Worry. Cheers,
Thanks,
mate.
Worry. That's Phil Waugh, Wallabies legend. And he mentioned Curtly Beale there, who's come back this year. I know you caught up with Curtly recently. Is he excited to get back into the fold? I know he's been training with the Wallabies a little bit.
Oh, he got a Wallaby program. He went up and saw the Wallaby staff just to get across his knee injury. He hasn't played for a number of months. So he got his program, and he's now going through that out at the Waratahs and training with their rehab crew. So, I mean, it's just for him, he's keen to get back and get involved. He's just got to get the body right so he can put himself, I guess, in the framework to be selected. But
would that if he plays the World Cup next year, would that be his fourth World
Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's been around a while.
He has.
KB.
He has. I mean,
he's on 95 caps. It'd be great to see him get 100. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And how's his headspace? How's he feeling coming back into
Australia
after Paris?
He's pumped. He and his wife are expecting. Yeah. They're first. So, look, there's a lot to be excited about. He's home. He's he had a bit of a frustrating finish to his time up there in Paris, but just through injury and whatever. But he's back now, and he's super super motivated. So he's out there training and been for a few saunas and all the rest of it. So he's even down there in the water in the winter, so he must be keen.
Do you think he'll play a part of the Bledisloe Cup this year?
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially. It's just about how his leg responds and how quickly he can get back into it. So it's more just a bit of a wait and see how his body's going.
I tell you who surprised me with a strong performance last night. Reece Hodge. I think he made some strong kicking meters last night.
His kicking was great.
In some times where we really needed some meters. I thought he was strong.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's one thing that he brings is a booming right foot kick, right? And there were times, there was that one time where Wright put him into, gave him the ball right on the touchline. He had no angle to work with and peeled off 50 metres. So that type of, that area of the game was really strong. There was, like, I mean, it has to be said, there was two missed opportunities in the first half. Mm. One where Hodgie just didn't, he missed Tom Wright altogether and it went out into touch.
Yep.
And Wrighty was unmarked on the outside. And then Teniella getting through on that little, beautiful little ball playing play from James Slipper back on the inside. And then Teniella not being able to find Frost. So though, like, I mean, we've got to talk about it because you get maybe four of those games in a test, four of those opportunities in a test match, and you lose two in your first 10 minutes. Because the whole focus for last night's game and the whole chat was about starting fast.
Yep.
Now the Wallabies started fast, but they had nothing to show for it because of those types of things. Just missed execution on those two players that I just spoke about. Also, Noah missing a kick as well. So we started
First kick was pretty easy, man.
Yeah, well. But I mean, look, I mean, it's pressure and all sorts of things. Yeah. Surprisingly as well, because the guys upstairs in the commentary sort of spoke about there was no breeze, but really late just before kickoff, there was quite a big breeze down on ground level as well. So, you know, you saw straight off the back of that missed kick from Noah, Owen Farrell put it out in the full from his 22 drop. So, there had to have been something to it because those two guys are, you know, normally really quite accurate with their kicking. So, anyway, what I mean by is we had a great start. Mm. We just had nothing to show for it. And then all of a sudden, England get up the other end, Owen kicks a kick, and then they've started to get more pay for less dominance. And, but I think, you know, for Hodgie coming in off not too much time within the squad, I thought he did a pretty good job.
Hey, lucky that you had your singlet on when there was a little bit of breeze there, Drew.
Yeah.
We've got a text through. I have a question for the show. Does your guest from last week regret telling Marcus Smith, and I quote, go back to the premiership, from Leon, a chuffed Englishman in Bondi?
I think he's talking about Cam Shepherd. I think Cam was told him to get back. He thought he hadn't done much. But look, that was another big key moment, I thought, as well, off the back of the line out. The ball was bouncing around and Noah just tried to stay on his feet, gather the ball and spin rather than just diving on it. Like in those moments, like that intent, and I know it seems like I'm nitpicking a little bit, but in these types of games, that's how fine a margins there are. And, you know, if Noah dives on that ball, the Wallabies retain the ball and they go again. Instead, he's tried to be fancier and stay on his feet, spin, pirouette out of it. Loses the ball, Marcus Smith runs 60 and they score. So fine margins again. Look, Marcus Smith maybe had, you know, in his own right, I think him and Owen Farrell have been trying for the last three games now just to work out how they play and mesh together because both of them are so used to steering the team around themselves. I thought last night he went pretty well.
Well, we've got tons of rugby from around the world coming up right after the news.
Join the conversation. Call 1300 01 1170 or text 0457 736 736. You're listening to The Show and Go with Jimmy Galvin and Drew Mitchell on SEN.
Welcome back to The Show and Go on SEN. Drew.
Yo.
Mate, what went on with the All Blacks last night?
Yeah, well, you know what? A lot's been said about the All Blacks and the pressure on the coach and how the All Blacks are poor and probably not enough said about how good Ireland have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for a number of years now, Ireland's kind of been the bogey team for the All Blacks. If there was one, it's been Ireland. And now have they come up with a blueprint on how to beat them? I mean, that's the first.
It seems to be them every time.
Well, it's the first series loss on New Zealand soil since 1994. Against the French. So it hasn't happened for a long time.
It was the first time they beat them in New Zealand last week.
Yeah. Yeah, last week. And then they've backed it up, going back to back. So, I mean, is it a case of the All Blacks coming back to the field or is it the field catching up to the All Blacks? Like, doesn't matter. Who cares? I mean, the fact is that it's happened.
Who cares?
And, you know, for teams like the Wallabies going up against them soon, there's a blueprint there at least on how to attack and defend the All Blacks.
I tell you what worries me though, Drew.
What?
Ireland go and beat the All Blacks, and then we've got to play them next. It's the sort of thing where the All Blacks will just rally together and.
Well, we don't have them next. They're not our next opponent. and we're not theirs. We've got Argentina for two games first.
We've got them. So hopefully, we've got them soon.
Hopefully they get that out of their system against the Springboks.
Yeah, get it out of your system, yeah. Please. But you're right. Ireland had a really strong series, yep. But they also were very consistent throughout the series. Mm. Your man Johnny Sexton was pivotal throughout the series as well. And I just feel like the All Blacks may not be as invincible as they may have been in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's always sort of somewhat of an aura about them, and sometimes it's not necessarily what you feel going up against them, it's what you hear going into it and the lead up and the wash up after a game, that type of thing that builds that type of aura or presence that they have. But I think, you know, going in a year out before the Rugby World Cup, they're definitely not in as strong as a position as they've been in the last three World Cups for sure. So, is the heat on Ian Foster, is it justified? I don't think they'll.
Yeah, I don't think they'll let him go. You that. What do you
I mean, well, I mean, I'm sure we'll go and get into this a little bit more with Mertz.
Yeah.
In the next segment, but I don't think they will. I think if you're getting rid of a coach this close to the Rugby World Cup, it spells panic stations, and I don't think the All Blacks, as a team or an organisation, will want to project that.
No, they won't do that, would they? No. And we saw the Springboks get up with a convincing win, let's be honest, over Wales. They look like a strong force for next year in the World Cup.
30-14 victors over the Welsh and their decider. And
that's their strongest team that they put on the park.
Yeah, so the second test, they made 14 changes. And then they've gone back to the same team from game one where they won the game. Which is almost, it's probably 85-90% of the team that won the Rugby World Cup in 2019.
They've just
pick and stick. That's what they're doing. Yanbar, the head coach, he's obviously, he trusts the group. And, you know, when they come back and, you know, win a series like that, then it's probably justified.
Eden Isabeth with his 100th test cap as well. Did you ever play against Eden?
No, but I played against his brother, Eben. I played against him a number of times. Yeah. Look, he's massive. He's sort of in the mold of your Buckies, and you know.
Yeah.
You talk about Niggle, like we just spoke about with Full War. He's a master of it. He also learnt the craft from guys like Buckies. So, it's a huge achievement for him to get 100 tests and to go out a winner in the series was good for him. And then the other one, Michael Checker, yeah. and his Los Pumas getting the series win in another decider for Argentina over Scotland.
Yeah, well,
Minute.
That looked like a good running game of rugby.
34-31, plenty of points in it.
But Scotland
a late penalty goal.
Scotland are playing a brand of rugby that I haven't seen them play before.
Yeah.
It's unlike them to be, you know, moving the ball around just as much as they are. And they're another team that we should be looking out for. But the other one we saw was...
it's Samoa taking out the Pacific Nations Cup. Yeah, beating Fiji 23-20 and just edging out Australia, right? They came second in that competition. So
it's a surprising win for me.
Yeah, I mean, they've been really solid in that. But I just wanted to mention one other. Georgia beat Portugal this weekend 23-14, but more so last weekend. Mm. Last weekend, Georgia beat Italy. So for many years, they've been arguing that they should be the ones in the Six Nations and not Italy, or at least have a promotion relegation playoff for the last placed in Six Nations. When I was at Toulon, Mamuka Gorgodzi, the godfather of Georgian rugby, he was the number eight there. He was almost challenging Sergio Parise, the number eight for Italy. Give us a chance. Let's play for it. Let's put it all on the line. And of course, Sergio and the Italians backed out of that because they kind of, I guess they kind of knew what was coming. So, Georgia are really making some waves as well. So I just like a year out from the World Cup, all these different permutations and results that we're getting across international footy means that next year's World Cup is so open.
And also, mate, Chile beat the USA.
Yes.
Chile. They're going to the World Cup.
They've qualified for the first time ever. Yeah. And the USA have to play in a repechage tournament to try and win their place with
Kenya and Portugal they've got.
Yeah, and I think one from the Asia Pacific.
Yeah. Undecided. Yeah,
that's right. So
it's exciting times.
Mate, and that's worrying if the USA don't even make the World Cup.
And they've got the next World Cup at home.
Well, the next
after,
one.
Yeah.
So, but good on Chile. And I mean, that could be the first time, the USA haven't made a World Cup since 1995. Otherwise, they've been at every one.
Indeed. Well, there's celebrations in Santiago. And there's going to be some more celebrations here after the break because we've got Andrew Mertens.
Join the conversation. Call 1300 01 1170 or text 0457 736 736. You're listening to The Show and Go with Jimmy Galvin and Drew Mitchell on SEN.
Hello and welcome back to The Show and Go on SEN with myself, Jimmy Galvin, and Drew Mitchell. I mean, Drew,
yeah,
we've got one of your colleagues coming on The Show and Go next.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear what he's got to say.
Well, Andrew Mertens, All Black legend, welcome to The Show and Go.
Morning, guys. Nice to be on after getting annoyed with you last night while Drew was at the coalface now at the SCG.
Yeah, mate, it was less of a coalface, more of a cold face. It was fresh on the sideline, mate. Let's firstly get into your man at the 5 o'clock game. Well, 5 o'clock here in Oz.
No.
Mate, what happened to the All Blacks?
Well, I think they got out of All Blacks. Ireland was pretty bloody good. Firstly, can I just clarify, I'm in coalface as in like the Zoolander. into your head, so.
The black lung.
It was tough. I managed to watch the first half. I did actually go along to the SCG, even though I wasn't working last night.
Oh, you just can't get enough of it.
I got along to a little dinner up there in the Sheridan Suite. I don't know how I managed to get on the list for that. I think Phil War might have somehow squeaked me in. Bunch of front rowers up there, Matt Dunning and Al Baxter and Ben Robinson. I was really right in the zone for me at the wait I'm at the moment. So, but that New Zealand game, mate, the Irish were fantastic. And they outplayed the All Blacks, and they just keep the ball moving, and they're just big bodies, aren't they? They're running into gaps. They keep the ball alive. And they've done their homework really well, you know. It's not often you see teams really pick off those easy yards like they did, but, you know, bringing James Lowe off the wing, straight off the scrum, and he made ground, and that led to, I think that eventually led to a try as well. So it was bloody good footy, and I think having those, you know, four series deciders this weekend has been fantastic for rugby in general.
Mm. Hey, Mertz, it's not panic stations at the moment in terms of coaching setup. You're a year out from the World Cup for All Blacks, and I find people are very quick to jump on the All Blacks if there is a loss. But yeah. What's the feeling like over there from the conversations you're having?
Mate, they certainly are. I'm in a number of WhatsApp groups, as we all are, and the glee when the All Blacks lose is just palpable. So, yeah, look, they've lost four of their last five games. In saying that, that was only the two teams. They've lost to probably the two form teams in the world at the moment, once to France and three times out of the last four to Ireland. I don't think panic stations. I think, you know, what the All Blacks have done well in the last 10 to 15 years is really build and maintain that depth across the squad. So, you know, they're still sort of doing that. It's no excuse when the performance aren't up to scratch. And I suspect with a lot, you know, a lot of the players will be looking at themselves from last night and maybe last week as well and saying, well, or the first week and saying, you know, we didn't perform like we'd like to. So, you know, there is a worry in that always. But is it panic stations? No, probably not when you put it in the context of playing the two best teams in the world at the moment. I know South Africans will get up in arms about that, but Ireland and France are leading the pack right at the moment. So, you know, it's probably not a lot of shame in that. But, yeah, there's a little bit to do. I mean, Braden Barrett had a quiet first half. He came out and tried to, you know, ramp up the pace in the second half. Looked really good for the first 5 or 10 minutes. But then just, I don't know, maybe some inaccuracies that come to the All Blacks today that we're not used to seeing. You know, a lot of their passing hasn't been particularly accurate. You know what it's like, Drew, when you've got a backline flowing movement and suddenly one player cops the pass on his shoulder rather than out in front.
Yeah.
It just stops your forward momentum, doesn't it, like that? So a lot of those that we saw from the All Blacks that we're not used to, and maybe the defence had a few holes, but I'm probably not qualified to talk about that.
So we're not predicting a change in the coaching ranks, but would there be any changes that you'd make player-wise? Like, for example, you just mentioned Beauden Barrett. Would you give Richie Mwanga a chance to start and to see if the team sort of has a little bit of a different look about it?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. Not as a criticism of Beauden, but just as a, you know, I thought Richie Mwanga was underused in this series. However, I don't know what the bigger plan is. You know, they might be doing that for a reason. Playing more in the rugby championship or what, you know, so they've got a, you know what it's like, mate, they've got a big international skill. schedule to get through in a year, and they've probably got a grander plan than any of the rest of us know about in terms of their personnel. So,
do you think also like there's an element of them just not picking players in the positions that they've been playing? Like Jordy Barrett played most of the year at 12. He's playing at fullback. Will Jordan played fullback all year. He's playing on the wing. Is it about just playing where players are most comfortable in their preferred positions as well?
Yeah, a little bit. They're building combinations in some areas as well. You know, the midfield's a little bit unsettled with the All Blacks at the moment. They're not quite sure. A couple of injuries there as well. I mean, Goodhue's only just come back recently. Anton Lennett-Brown's still out of the picture. Ioane, I'm surprised that... I like Ioane. I like him as a centre. I'm keen to hear your view on it, Drew, as well, because, I mean, he's just got pace, which is absolutely irreplaceable.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't seem to be getting the ball, getting the opportunities. Yeah. I mean, when he played with the Blues at centre, I know Super Rugby's a different story, but they'd give him the ball with a bit of time and have a go at an outside break. So he can use his speed, but he just doesn't seem to get those opportunities in the All Blacks, whether it's just better defences coming up or what, I don't know. But seems a bit underused in 13.
Yeah, well, the other thing with Ioane is he's a big body and he attracts a lot of attention in a back line. He gets shut down pretty quickly as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sometimes, as a ball player and having options at the line as well, whether you play Havili short or if you've got Rico or if you've got Sevo Reese or someone blind wing is popping up. So just to have options rather than having a really obvious ball carrier. I think sometimes now we're so worried about just using that first phase to set up for the second phase and the third phase to get to the right landmarks on the field as opposed to, putting options at the line for the defenders to make a decision about and then picking and choosing as a ball player. Feels a little bit more predetermined these days.
Yeah, and I wonder if you had Ioane down at the Crusaders, like I say, previously playing centre at the Blues, he was getting those chances. I don't think you'd leave the guy out there without giving him at least one chance off, maybe not a line out, it's a bit more difficult, but off a scrum at least. Bringing a couple of extra players in the back line, missing them out, getting it out to him quickly, and just letting him have a go at that outside break when he's got 20 metres in between the back line, rather than giving it to him in phase ball. So, yeah, I don't know, because, I mean, you've played in the pod system and stuff like that too, so you know what kind of modern rugby is about. I've never experienced it. And I think there's a lot of it now that is, like you say, setting phases for the sake of it. Mm. And, the two reasons you're doing that, obviously, are to get a bit of leg weariness from the opposition defence and set up for later in the game. But secondly, also manipulate the defence into a position where you've got maybe some not frontline defenders that you've taken out of play with a couple of phases, and suddenly they're having to reorganise and you might get more of a mismatch somewhere. So I guess there's that part of it as well, and I probably should educate myself a little bit better on sort of modern structures and stuff. But, like it's not like, I don't want to come out like Campo and say, mate, just throw out a double miss and hit the winger,
Back when defence was optional. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't throw stones on that either.
nor can I.
you've got players there who are dangerous. If I was playing on a team with you, Drew, like Niagara Rugby on the pond too, and I'd be wanting to get you the ball. Well, I want to get the ball out of my hands as quickly as possible. I'd want to get it to yours as rapidly as I could.
Hey, Mertz, you're moving over to France at the end of this year, mate. Tell me, what's going on there?
Oh, well, just looking at it at the moment, mate, obviously World Cup's over there next year, so, everyone's sort of lining up and trying to work out what they're doing. I mean, there are tours for Africa already, well, not for Africa, for France, being set up already and people hosting and stuff like that. So I think, we're a year out, for whatever it is, 14 months out from the World Cup, so everyone's sort of starting to position themselves. So I'm no different. Keen to see when the rights get signed up on all the different broadcasters. Particularly love to see Stan, obviously, get it. I mean, it's in negotiation phase, I think, at the moment, and the front runner has got to be the incumbent broadcaster.
Surely.
So, yeah, just sort of looking at that and working out where it might be able to fit in a little holiday alongside doing hard work following the rugby games around.
Good on you, Mets. Well, Mets, thank you so much for joining us on the show and go. Bad luck last night for the All Blacks. I know you're reeling a little bit this morning, but we do appreciate your company on SEN here.
Cheers, guys. Nice to talk. We're all reeling a little bit, but great to have those series and great to have a series finale. So,
absolutely.
Thanks, Mertz.
Thank you, Mertz.
Cheers, boys.
That's Andrew Merton's All Blacks legend on the show and go. We'll be back right after the break.
Join the conversation. Call 1300 01 1170 or text 0457 736 736. You're listening to The Show and Go with Jimmy Galvin and Drew Mitchell on SEN.
That's right. This is The Show and Go with your Sunday morning rugby feast. Drew, we've got a bit more coming up in the world of rugby at the moment.
Well, we do. Firstly, I just want to get to a couple of texts. We've got one. Has Eddie Jones answered his critics?
Well, I'm going to say yes. And you just said off air that's from Leon over in Bondi again. I'm going to say yes, but you just said in the ad break then he wouldn't care of the criticism that he received after the first game.
I think that's all white noise for Eddie. I think he would have just the only things he would have cared about, obviously, the feedback he's getting from within the squad and those types of communications, but also from the RFU boss and the people that make decisions, not so much the journalists and the commentary and that type of thing. I don't think he would care at all.
Yeah, and he doesn't like long sleeve jerseys either.
No, he definitely doesn't like those. No, but he was under the pump when when they arrived here.
He was
lost the game, probably even a little bit more external pressure. At least we don't know whether it was internal or not, but external. And you know, he's come away with a hard fought series victory. You know, 14 months out from a World Cup, so there's no pressure on his job, I wouldn't imagine.
Hey, what's this other text here from Muzz?
Yes, this is the text now. I'm not an All Blacks hater by any means. In fact, I have huge respect for the team and country, but it is a little bit unusual for them to lose twice in a row like that. Feeling for our Kiwi cousins as it would be like a national day of mourning, but I believe it is a really good thing for rugby in general. Interesting times. So thanks for your text, Muzz. I don't necessarily have too much sympathy or empathy for the All Blacks. You know, they've lost two games in a row. We've lost 19 years of the Bledisloe Cup. So I don't know if that...
Have we lost 19
I don't know, 19
years.
Or 18 years or something. I don't
in
know what
row?
It is. Well, we haven't held it for that long. So that would mean it's in a row, Jimmy.
I suppose it would. Yeah.
So I don't have too much sympathy, but hopefully they lose a few more on the trot and we get our hands on that Bledisloe Cup.
And we will.
Yes!
Thanks for your time with us this morning on SEN. We'll see you the same time next week.